ESPN Radio 1392.5. It is The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor. Thank you so much for joining us here on this blessed Sunday morning. 381-1313 if you want to call and talk about stuff. I don't know if anything's going on. Oh, yeah, there was some football games yesterday, stuff like that. So, yeah, 859-381-1313 if you just want to call and say hello, or if you're looking to vent your frustrations about yesterday's happenings. On today's show, the Big Ten joins college football just in time for Halloween. Kentucky basketball gets some good news, but is it really investable good news, if you know what I mean? The Bengals may not be winning, but they're covering spreads. The World Series continues. And of course, as always, the most profitable segment in Lexington Radio, our Mac Daddy Stogie Picks, coming off yet another profitable week. Hey, I'll crank out 3 in 2 weeks the rest of my life and be a bajillionaire. Forget about your retirement plans, your 401ks. We're all about get-rich-quick schemes here on The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor on ESPN Radio 1300 92.5. Thank you so much for listening this morning. But first, Herb Brooks. No, it's not the guy from Blazing Saddles or Spaceballs. That's Mel Brooks. Herb Brooks is the coach of the team that pulled off the second greatest upset in sports history, the 1980 USA Olympic hockey team. Of course, the greatest upset in sports history, we all remember that one. We're all there for that one, right? David over Goliath. David using 5 smooth stones from way back in the day. Well, I've always wondered what the odds were for David on that one, if it had any value or not. But I digress. People of my age group were barely old enough to remember that 1980 USA hockey team, and it's a transcendent story that has endured the test of time. So much so that the movie Miracle was made in 2004, where Kurt Russell played Coach Herb Brooks in that movie. And it was such an iconic moment that the local video arcade in Richmond when I was growing up had a USA versus Russia hockey game where you kind of manually moved your players in a foosball-type manner. That game even had the boo button. You could just hit the button and the crowd would start booing. And of course, I hit it incessantly because I was always playing with Russia due to the fact that everybody I knew wouldn't play the game unless they were the United States. And I just wanted to upset as many people as I possibly could. Regular listeners to this show will find that hard to believe, I know, but still. Yes, back in 1980, there were establishments called arcades, by the way, where we went to play video games a quarter at a time. But anyway, the crowning moment of that 1980 USA hockey team and that run was an upset over the Russian hockey team, a team that they had lost to in an exhibition game 10-3 just before the Olympics started. You ever see a hockey team score 10 goals in the National Hockey League, the NHL? No, I don't either. Never heard of one. That's how dominant that game was. And, of course, the iconic line from Al Michaels in that Olympics, "Do you believe in miracles?" Yes, that came to the end of that Russian game. He made a career out of that line, that's for sure. So it's hard to believe that's been over 40 years since that iconic moment in sports history. But what people have often forgotten about that USA win over Russia in 1980 is that it wasn't the final game. They still had another game to play after that to actually win the gold medal. If you're old enough to remember the Olympics or anything about it, do you remember the country the United States defeated to win the gold medal? It was Finland. It was not Russia. I know this is back in 1980, but everybody remembers the Russian game. Nobody remembers the Finland game. I didn't remember it either. I had to look it up. And yes, we do research here on The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor, ESPN Radio 1392.5. But Herb Brooks was naturally worried in that Finland game that his team would suffer a letdown after the Russian game. He figured that his kids thought they'd done everything they needed to win the gold medal. And they probably did. But they went out in the next game against Finland, the championship game, to win the gold medal. And they were losing in the second intermission. They were losing 2-1. So Herb Brooks came up with a speech during that second intermission, 20 minutes to go for the gold medal. It was simple, it was direct, and it was right on the money. And he walked, didn't say anything about X's and O's, we're not an X and O show here on the Bottom Line. And he looks around and he tells his kids, men, after everything you've accomplished and endured, if you lose this game, you'll take it with you to your bleeping graves. And as he started to leave the locker room, he stopped and turned around and added, in a much louder voice, your bleeping graves. Now, I think many of you understand what the word bleeping is that I'm trying to say. But the point he was trying to make was that the last game that they played was great, and it's something that they'll always have. But when you move from a perceived underdog just hoping to win to the perceived favorite and now you're expected to win, it's an obstacle that can be very difficult to mentally prepare yourselves to overcome. Now, of course, we know what happened after that. The U.S. hockey team went on to win the gold medal after that emotional speech during that intermission. But nobody remembers that game. They all remember the game against Russia. What Brooks was able to do with that simple statement was make sure his players knew that their job wasn't done just because they had pulled off one big upset. Any good team could pull off an upset, but the great teams are the ones who can sustain winning after those upsets when they're now the favorite. And that brings us to Kentucky football yesterday. After last week's historic win over Tennessee, one that this program had waited for 36 years, they followed it up with a game they might not be able to take to their graves, but a game that will stick with them for a long time. As Kentucky was thoroughly outplayed and outcoached yesterday in Missouri, losing that game 20-10, and a game that honestly should have been worse than that. And yes, their offensive line coach, John Schlarman, couldn't make the trip due to health concerns. God bless him and his family. That's not why they lost this game. Missouri outgained Kentucky 421-145. That's almost three times more yards for Missouri. Missouri had more first downs, 26-8. 26 more minutes of time of possession. With a team like Kentucky and the way they run the ball and the way they conserve time offensively, that's shocking in itself. If you knew those stats before the game, you'd say there's no way Kentucky has a chance to win this game. Yet in the fourth quarter, somehow, Kentucky had the ball with a chance to tie the game. That just goes to show you how Missouri mismanaged time and timeouts at the end of the first half, and how they squandered an 8-minute drive to open the second half. But let's play the blame game on this one. Who do we blame for this loss? Now, on this show, you know who we turn to first on this team. Anytime there's something to blame, it's Terry Wilson. Last week, Jarrett Garantano of Tennessee played terribly against Kentucky. His QBR rating for that game, 4.4 out of 100. That includes three interceptions, two of which were returned for touchdowns. You have to wonder if this QBR is kind of like the SAT test. You get a certain number of points just for having a pulse and walking out on the field. Well, Terry Wilson yesterday had a quarterback rating of 4.0 out of 100. Even worse than Garantano's game against Kentucky the week before. 3 of 9 passing. 35 yards. If you take away that touchdown pass to Josh Ali in the fourth quarter, he was 2 of 8 for 9 yards. Add in the fact he was credited with -2 yards rushing. Of course, you count sacks with that in college football. And it was a terrible game for Wilson. It was easily his worst game of the year, and it couldn't have come at a worse time. Stoops said they yanked Wilson in the second quarter because they didn't think he was playing well and wanted to make a change. We'll be honest. I'm shocked it happened when it did, and I'm also shocked they put Wilson back in the game in the third quarter. And now if you look at the overall QBR ratings for the entire season, Terry Wilson, of the 14 SEC quarterbacks eligible, is ranked 12th, which seems exactly on par for when he was 13th in QBR each of the last two seasons. So for all that talk in the preseason that he had a new haircut and a new attitude and he was saying all the right things and that's why he was going to be such a much better quarterback this year, he's still who we thought he was, to quote the late, great Dennis Green. Do we think we're putting too much emphasis on the quarterback of a college football team? Not really. Was he good in 2018 because of his surrounding cast? Josh Allen, Benny Snell, Lynn Bowden? Probably. But why do you put all the emphasis on the quarterback on this show? Why do you always cut on Terry Wilson? Why is he always the focus of your attention when things go bad? Well, let's look at the top three teams in America right now. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. What do those three teams all have? Great quarterback play. This year, no exception. Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, Justin Fields, they're all, even though Justin Fields only has one game, they're all the top 10 in the nation in QBR rating. It's no coincidence these guys are the three favorites for the Heisman Trophy. And that's why we place so much emphasis on Terry Wilson on this show. Quarterbacks win games. And, more importantly in our world, they move point spreads. Running backs, receivers, anybody else, they don't move the meter out in the desert. Now, you're sitting there saying, well, this guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You want some proof? Here's my Exhibit A that I always use. In 2014, Todd Gurley at the University of Georgia, he was about to win the Heisman Trophy. Midseason, he was the clear-cut favorite out in the desert. And the week that Georgia was going to play Missouri, that week, Georgia started as the 3-point favorite out in the desert. And on Monday night of that week, word came down that Gurley was involved in some kind of signature scam with an agent, and he might not be playing on Saturday, so they took that game off the board out in the desert. And all the things got settled, and it was finally announced later in the week that Gurley wouldn't play in that game. So the game goes back up on the board on Friday, and did that line change at all? No, it didn't. Georgia was still a 3-point favorite. The line didn't change at all. With Gurley, they're favored by 3. Without Gurley, they're favored by 3. So a run-of-the-mill quarterback will change point spreads in the desert. The Heisman Trophy candidate front-runner at running back, he doesn't change lines out in the desert. That's why we focus on quarterbacks on this show. That's why we put all of our attention on Terry Wilson when bad things happen. And that's why last year, when Kentucky didn't really have a quarterback, Kentucky covered so many point spreads. Why? Because they didn't really have a quarterback. And that's why they were undervalued every week. That's how you go 10-3 against the spread last season like Kentucky did. Because they didn't have a quarterback that anybody trusted. Anybody know what Lynn Bowden had at quarterback? No, he couldn't throw the ball very well at all. That was obvious. But yet they were still covering spreads and winning games. So when people tell me I'm too rough on Terry Wilson, I think I'm not rough enough on him. That's just how important quarterback play is in college football. But what happened in the second quarter? Here comes Joey Gatewood. We've got a Joey Gatewood sighting. He trots out on the field, but he wasn't much better himself. Wilson's anemic QBR was 4, but Gatewood was 10.5. So it's not like he came in and was a regular Jeff Hostetler to Phil Sims from back in the day. But was Wilson the only reason Kentucky lost yesterday? No, it wasn't. The defense did not get any turnovers yesterday. It's amazing when you don't get turnovers how much differently the game looks. 2 weeks ago, you get 6 interceptions, you win. Last week, you get 3 interceptions, 2 of them returned for touchdowns, you win. This week, you get nothing, you lose. Isn't that amazing how that works? Missouri converted 10 of 20 third downs, and 10 of those that they missed, they went for it on fourth down. Down and got it. So they were essentially 14 out of 20 on third downs, if you count it like that. They also ran 92 plays compared to 36 for Kentucky. The defense didn't lose this game for Kentucky, but they couldn't stop Missouri consistently all day long. If not for horrible game management at the end of the first half and terrible decisions by the coach in the beginning of the second half, this game would have been a larger blowout for Missouri. But some other questions we have about this game. Why doesn't Chris Rodriguez, the running back, play more? Yes, A.J. Rose had 43 yards, including a 26-yarder, but Rodriguez is obviously the better player, and he has been all season. Yet, Rose, who apparently has more big play ability, according to the coaches, continues to get a majority of the carries. Can we put this at the feet of offensive coordinator Eddie Grant? Maybe. I don't like to blame offensive coordinators. Now you're getting a little too carried away. But Rodriguez had 4 carries in the first 3 quarters. Then he got some in the fourth quarter, and suddenly Wilson hits a touchdown. And if you only saw that one drive, you'd think Kentucky would probably win the game easily. That's how impressive it was. But then Kentucky gets the ball back down 17-10 with a chance to win the game, miraculously. A game they had no business being within three touchdowns of, based on the numbers. Rodriguez is not in the game for that drive when they're down 17-10. And predictably, Kentucky goes three and out, and the game is essentially over at that point. But that brings me to a question about Mark Stoops and his strategy, to use that term loosely. What does he think he's doing when he wins the coin toss and then doesn't defer, just wants to take the ball to start the game? What is that all about? Anybody with any kind of analytics knowledge whatsoever will tell you that it is definitely an advantage to defer to the second half. You can get what Missouri had yesterday. You can get the ball at the end of the first half and then flip it over after halftime, and you get the ball right back. It works to your advantage. Bill Belichick's been doing this for years in the NFL, setting things up that way. But yet Stoops ignores this. It might work for you once every blue moon. Send a message to your own players. Hey, we want the ball first. But long term, you're just hurting your team. I don't understand why you would want to do something like that. But yet he's done it more than once. One more thing I noticed yesterday. Kelvin Joseph, a defensive player, gets knocked down on a play by the Missouri running back. All the Missouri players go and taunt Joseph while he's on the field, and nobody from Kentucky goes and even tries to help this poor kid Joseph up, or gets in the face of the Missouri players to get him away so he could actually give up without taunting him to death. Is that a big deal? Maybe not. But it was something that proved to be something that the common man could grab onto, for lack of an analytical term to describe it, that maybe Missouri was more fired up and wanted to win the game more than Kentucky. And that doesn't fly on this show, doesn't fly out in the desert. But sometimes when you see things like this, it makes you wonder. Maybe one team just flat out wants it more than the other one. That's not something we like to talk about in this show, but hey, it was obvious yesterday. Did somebody know something about this game yesterday, by the way? The line out in the desert started at 5, was at 5.5 by midweek, but by game time, Kentucky was only a 3-point favorite. That's a substantial move. And yesterday was only the third time in Mark Stoops' career where he was an SEC road favorite. Two of those three times where he is an SEC road favorite now, he's come up the straight-up loser. 2018 in Tennessee, they were favored. They lost. Last year at Vandy, 9-point favorite, they actually won that game big. And now this year at Missouri, they go in as a 3-point favorite at game time. They lose that one. So should we ever trust Stoops as an SEC road favorite? No. Why? Because it doesn't happen that often, but when it does, history tells us we shouldn't. But in my entire lifetime, there's never been a bigger tease than Kentucky football. Sure, they'd pull off an upset every blue moon, but they'd always follow it up with a stinker. Those of us who have been around here and have watched this stuff for years and years, we know better to get our hopes up about Kentucky football, but then again, the Big Blue Nation always does. They're the girl at the end of the bar that you buy drinks for all night, and at the end of the night, she walks out with another guy. Oh, but it's different now. Mark Stoops has changed everything, and you can't compare this program to the program from the past. Yes, you're right. The program is better now, and you can't compare this program to the past. But this program still can't stand prosperity. Do you want proof? Mark Stoops has pulled off 12 upsets during the regular season in his time at Kentucky. When we say upsets, we mean winning teams, winning games when the point spread out in the desert says they're an underdog and they're not supposed to win. After 10 of those 12 upsets, Kentucky has played an SEC team the next week. In those 10 games following an upset, Stoops is 2-8, and he's actually 3-7 against the point spread. So here we have Kentucky coming off a big win, a win where they weren't expected to win. And in the next game against another SEC team, they rarely follow it up. Oh, you say that can't be the case since 2018, the dream season. That's when the new era of Kentucky football began. That's when we should start looking back. When we start getting history with looking back. The other years don't count. We start in 2018 around here. Well, since the restart at 2018, the dream season, Kentucky has pulled off 5 regular season upsets. in the games following those upsets that were against SEC teams, including yesterday, Kentucky is now 1-4 in those games and 1-4 against the point spread. So you can say all you want that this is a negative show and we're haters and whatever. No, we're not. We want to see Kentucky win. Heck, as much as I've killed him on this show, I want to see Terry Wilson win the Heisman Trophy. Because I know if Kentucky football is doing well, more people are listening to this station. More people are listening to my show. That's what we want. But the numbers, but we also live in the real world where the numbers tell us Terry Wilson is a very inconsistent quarterback. He has games where he plays great, and he has games where he plays not so great. That's not my opinion. I'm telling you what the numbers are saying, and that's the bottom line. ESPN Radio, 1392.5, the bottom line with Brad Taylor. Coming up after the break, a little more on this Kentucky football game from yesterday. We'll look at the world of college football yesterday and a little stuff on Kentucky basketball. Now that they have new players eligible, should we believe the hype, as the old schoolers used to say? That's all coming up. But first, Clark's Auto Service. That's where I get my car serviced. It's where you should too. My car runs like a dream ever since I've been taking it there. Clark's Auto Service, the best in the business. That's at clarksautolexington.com. That's where you can find their information. clarksautolexington.com. More bottom line with UK football and basketball after the break right here on ESPN Radio 1392.5. ESPN Radio 1392.5. David Byrd on a Sunday morning, huh? Very nice, Chauncey. Bottom line with Brad Taylor. Thank you so much for listening to us on this Sunday morning. Got up to come into the station today. Man, it was cold. I didn't know what was going on, but hey, we got to do what we got to do here at ESPN Radio. That's okay. Cold weather means more football. And back to that Kentucky football. By the way, if you want to call us, 859-381-1313. If you want to talk Kentucky football. You got the NFL coming up today. All kinds of stuff on the slate for the rest of this show and for your day on ESPN Radio. Don't forget Bengals and Browns on our sister station, 92.1 Classic Rock. That'll be at 1 o'clock today. And a plethora of games coming up here on ESPN Radio. Steelers and Titans, Battle of the Undefeateds at 12:30 here on ESPN Radio 1300, including Game 5 of the World Series tonight as well here on ESPN Radio. But back to Kentucky football before we get back to the other stuff happening in the world. We look forward now. What do you expect from this team going forward? Where are all the pundits? Where are all the people that came out before the season and said, this is a 7-win team? I heard people, in fact, I got into some Twitter arguments, discussions, about some people around here saying 8 wins for the University of Kentucky. Well, now you're just being a fan. Now you can't look at things analytically. You can't look at things from a real-world, unbiased perspective. And that's what we try to do on this show. We get the same amount of sleep here if Kentucky wins, if Kentucky loses. If they lose, we're not burning couches out in the road. We're not throwing bricks through the television set. We're not throwing beer bottles through the window. We get the same amount of sleep, win or lose. That's the way you have to be if you're trying to pick winners and you're trying to be on the right side of these games. Don't get emotional over stock, Bud Fox. Gordon Gekko told me that in Wall Street back in the 80s. So we look forward, and I have more grim news to tell the Big Blue Nation about Kentucky football. Kentucky's sitting at 2-3 right now, but yet still to come on the schedule, Georgia, Florida, Alabama. Where are those 7 and 8 win predictions now? Probably like me, when I walk into Kroger with my black hat and my black gator on, those are the kind of disguises those people are wearing now, but I digress. This week, Georgia comes to town. Georgia coming off a bye week. And the Dogs will be a nice favorite in this one, even though they do have some quarterback issues themselves right now. But fortunately for Kentucky, the Big Blue Nation won't have very high expectations for this team this week. Kentucky's coming off a loss, facing a team they haven't defeated in a long time. And with that in mind, Kentucky might, just might, have some value as a home dog this week against Georgia. I'll be very interested in seeing what that line is when it comes out later today from out in the desert. You've got to think Kentucky is, or Georgia is more than a touchdown favorite in this game. If that's the case, do you mind taking Kentucky and some points at home in a game like this? I may not do it. Every dog has his day, as we said last week. And there are some times when you're with them, sometimes when you're against them. And just like us when it comes to Kentucky, it's okay. We'll be on you one day. We'll be with you one day. We'll be against you the next day. Not even bat an eye. And that's the way you have to be to try to pick winners in this little business. But Kentucky's not the only team in college football. Yesterday, the Big Ten finally joined the fray. Well, Ohio State joined the fray. All the rest of them are just like trying to make money for their schools. Ohio State, a player for the national championship, and Justin Fields. You talk about teams that have quarterback situations. Georgia should have Justin Fields as their quarterback right now, but they ran him out of town for a quarterback that wasn't nearly as good. That's another story for the Athens and Atlanta sports talk radio shows. Believe me, I've heard those before. Justin Fields, in our mind, the most valuable player in college football. Oh, well, he's not as good as Trevor Lawrence. I didn't say he was better than Trevor Lawrence. But Clemson has two guys on the bench, two Elite 11 guys, five-star recruits, just waiting for Trevor Lawrence to leave town next year so they can take over. Trevor Lawrence goes down. Clemson's still pretty good. They're pretty well off because they have decent quarterbacks on the bench. Do you know who Justin Fields' backup was this time last year? Gunnar Hoke. Do you remember that name? Yeah, he couldn't even win the job at Kentucky. And then you're going to ask him to take over at Ohio State if Justin Fields goes down? Yeah. Justin Fields, more valuable to his team than Trevor Lawrence is to his team, if you make sense of that. Before this weekend, you could have had Fields at 7-1 or 8-1 to win the Heisman, mainly because it's an out-of-sight, out-of-mind principle. Those odds, after one game where Fields looked great, those are going to change this week. So you probably missed your chance to get the 8-1 odds, but you could still get some value with Justin Fields one game into his season to win the Heisman. So if you are so inclined, if you know what I mean, because it doesn't take much to lay 150 to get 100 if you're trying to take Trevor Lawrence to win the Heisman. That's not a good bet. I don't care if he does win. It's still not a good bet. Elsewhere in college football yesterday, the aforementioned Trevor Lawrence and Clemson beat Syracuse 47-21. But they were a 47.5-point favorite going into that game. It's against my religion to go to take a team minus 47.5. I don't care what league you're playing in. I won't lay 47.5 points with anybody. And, of course, Dabo Swinney goes to his press conference yesterday, and everybody's upset. What's wrong with Clemson? The score was 27-21 in the fourth quarter against Syracuse. What's wrong with Clemson? And then he asks, well, did we actually win the game? Yeah, we won the game. What's wrong with you people? Well, you didn't cover the spread. That's what's wrong with you. And you let this team stick with you a little longer than you should have. That's why people are upset, Dabo. He knows exactly why they're here. He's just playing it off. He knows that they didn't cover the spread. Don't sit there and tell me that these coaches and these players don't know what the spreads are for these games either. Don't sit there and tell me Trevor Lawrence didn't walk out on that field and didn't know that he was a 47.5-point favorite in that game. Oh, yeah. I can promise you. Those guys, those coaches, those players, they all know. And if you don't think they do, well, you're living in a dream world with the rest of the guys out with the unicorns and the pots of gold at the end of the rainbow and where's the beef commercial. There you go. Otherwise, in the SEC yesterday, Alabama was a 22-point favorite and defeated Tennessee 48-17. Jared Garantano actually played better against Alabama than against Kentucky. Go figure. Number three, Notre Dame, a team that usually is always overrated, but this year they're killing people. They were a 10-point favorite and routed Pittsburgh 45-3. Is Pittsburgh any good? I don't think so. How do you lose to Notre Dame 45-3 these days? Number five, Ohio State was a 27.5-point favorite over Nebraska. Nebraska, the one team that wanted to join the SEC for a year when they figured out that the Big Ten wasn't playing football. Hey, SEC, let us play with you guys. Well, you probably are better off playing eight games in the Big Ten, especially after getting beaten 52-17 yesterday. Alabama, Notre Dame, and Ohio State all covered the spread. Of course, Alabama lost their great receiver, Jalen Waddle, yesterday because he broke his leg bringing a kick out of the end zone, in which Nick Saban blamed the player, saying that the player shouldn't have done that. Well, was it kind of taken out of context? Kind of, a little bit. But then again, why are you even saying that, Saban? By the way, shout out to Rutgers winning their first Big Ten game since 2017 and their new coach, Greg Schiano, who actually for about 5 minutes was the coach at Tennessee. But they said, well, after the public kind of backlash and say, we don't want this guy. We don't want this guy. And Philip Fulmer says, I don't want this guy either. Yeah, he was gone. Now he's at Rutgers. Now he's winning games that Rutgers hasn't won in years. Yeah, there you go, Tennessee. Who'd you rather have right now, Greg Schiano or Jeremy Pruitt? Uh-huh. You'd get a mixed bag reaction to that one. Elsewhere in the SEC, Auburn outscored Ole Miss in a game of teams that have all defeated Kentucky this season, 35-28. Auburn was a three-point favorite. Nick Saban this week said offenses win games now in the SEC and in college football, not defenses. Boy, that's bad news for Kentucky if that's true. LSU smashed South Carolina 52-24 in a game where LSU was only a four-point favorite. It's tough to if you can predict LSU this year, good luck. Go for it. I can't. You don't know what to expect. You lose at Missouri the way they did, and then you win this game yesterday by 28 points. Who knows? It's tough to make out anyone in the SEC this year, much less LSU. Nationally, Indiana defeated number 8 Penn State. Could someone please tell me how Penn State was the number 8 team in America? Yeah, I don't know. Indiana was a 6-point underdog in that game. James Franklin, once again, showing his true colors in that game. And that leads us to looking forward to next week's college football, headlined by Ohio State going to Penn State, who used to be number 8. Now they won't. James Franklin usually actually plays well in this game against Ohio State at home, but I don't think this is the year they get it done. In the SEC next week, Mississippi State travels to Alabama. Mike Leach gets his first crack at Nick Saban in the SEC. Hasn't won a game since that opener against LSU. But if you don't think Mike Leach will be ready to face Nick Saban this week, then you don't know anything about Mike Leach. Be very interested to see how many points Mississippi State's getting this week, because I'm looking to take them as a dog, because somehow, some way, Leach is going to cover that spread against Alabama. I'm not going to guarantee it, but I wouldn't bet against it. I'll just put it that way. Next week, LSU goes to Auburn. Sheesh. Do you trust either team in that one? No, I don't. Ole Miss goes to Vandy. How many points will Lane Kiffin put up in this one? Missouri goes to Florida, who hasn't played in 2 weeks because of the COVID-19 virus. And the surprise team of the SEC, Arkansas, travels to Texas A&M for a wake-up call in College Station. All games to look forward to those betting lines coming out this afternoon. Very interesting propositions next week in the SEC and nationally. ESPN Radio 1392.5. It's the Bottom Line with Brad Taylor. Coming up after the break, it's time, ladies and gentlemen. The most profitable segment in Lexington Radio, our Mac Daddy Stogies. We don't have as many as usual today because, hey, we don't have to pick every game on the board. We're trying to make some money. We're trying to pick some winners. But that doesn't mean we have to pick every game. We pick only the games we like. So we got a couple coming up, and it does include your hometown Bengals. That's coming up after the break. But first, Jimmy Skinny McKinney at J&R Construction. He is the best in the business at home remodeling. He's offering visuals. Now you can do that online consultations through the Zoom network if you want to have the Zoom meeting. Jimmy Skinny McKinney will set those up for you, and he is the best in the business at anything home remodeling. Check his website out, jrcsi.com. That's Jimmy Skinny McKinney, J&R Construction, jrcsi.com. Coming up after the break, the money's coming in. It's our Mac Daddy Stogies. Next here on ESPN Radio, 1392.5. ESPN Radio, 1392.5. You know, there's something to be said for a musical group that wears flower pots on their head in music videos. Just saying. Bottom Line with Brad Taylor. Thank you for joining us on this blessed Sunday morning. 381-1313 if you want to call in and vent your frustrations. Or if you want to jump for joy, whatever you want to do. 381-1313. You can talk to us here on the Bottom Line. It's not all bad news for the Big Blue Nation, though. I have good news. As I'm sure you've already heard, basketball season is coming, allegedly. Usually by this time of year, Midnight Madness or whatever madness they call it now, it's usually ancient history, and all the people who have sat out in line for a week and a half for those free Wildcat Madness tickets that they give away, they've gone back into hibernation for the year. And we're looking to start the season in just a few days, but not this year. We're starting the season very late November. But anyway, Olivier Saar and Jacob Toppin now eligible to play for the Kentucky Wildcats this year. And with this news, the pundits immediately jumped UK into their preseason top tens as usual. So for the upteenth season, Kentucky will go into the year with a preseason top five rating most places when the first AP poll comes out. Whenever that will be, we don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. But does a preseason ranking guarantee a big season for Kentucky? No way. Only twice under John Calipari has Kentucky lived up to expectations of the preseason AP poll. In 2011, they were preseason ranked number 11, and they made the Final Four. In 2012, they were preseason ranked number 2, and they won the national champs, the national championship. 2011, 2012. Every other year, Kentucky has not lived up to the preseason ranking in the AP poll in terms of where they finished in the NCAA tournament. All these years, 2010, the John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins year, they were ranked 4th preseason. They got beat in the Elite Eight. Oh, I could go down the line every year ranked 1, 2, or 3. And in the NCAA tournament, every year that they've lost in this tournament under Calipari, they were favored out in Las Vegas to win every single time except one in 2017. They were an underdog in the Elite Eight by 2 points, and they lost to North Carolina, ironically enough, by 2 points. That's the only time that I'll bet on Calipari in the tournament, when he's an underdog. In those games, he's 4-1 straight up as an underdog in the tournament, and he's actually 4-0-1 against the spread. So that's good news, but you don't see it very often, because Calipari is, quote-unquote, supposed to win so much. So yes, great news that Sarr and Toppin are now eligible. But should the Big Blue Nation be going out and making reservations for the Final Four, if they actually have one this year, history tells us that you should not. And that's the bottom line. ESPN Radio 1392.5, The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor. Let's get down to business. You're not here for slaps and tickles. You're here to make some money. Let me give you two games right now. On our sister station, 1 o'clock this afternoon, Bengals at Browns, the Battle of Ohio. Baker Mayfield, the 31st-ranked quarterback in Pro Football Focus. Joe Burrow, 17th. Who would you rather have right now? I think I'd rather have Burrow, too. The AFC North grudge match. They've already played once this year. That game was 35-30, backdoor cover for the Bengals. Bengals won 4-1 straight up this year, 4-1-1 against the spread, including last week, 7.5-point dog, only lost by 4 to the Colts. Losing but covering the spread has been a theme this year for the Bengals, and this line opened with Cleveland as a 4-point favorite. Now the money has gotten it down to about 3, 3.5. You might want to get, if you're waiting to take the Bengals, wait till game time. This line might go back up to 4. In fact, my little signals on my little computer here said that it probably will go back up to 4. Cincinnati value as a divisional dog with the line move in its favor. Some of the respected money has hit this under, dropping the total from 51.5 to 51. And that's where we like it, too. We love the under today. The under is, the total is 51 in this game. Here's our trend for you. A lot of people have called in and messaged me and said, hey, we love those trends that you give out. Hey, we're going to give you a trend right now. Since 2003, in division matchups, and this is one, with totals of more than 50, this is one of those two, the under has gone 89 and 69 over the years. That's 56%. And if you're into this kind of things, if you're really looking at this, the referee for today's game is Tony Corrente. If you look at stuff like this, you know who this referee is. Tony Corrente, career, the under hits 59% of the time. 103-73 is his record to the under, 59%, including 5-0 this season. So if you're into all kinds of stuff like that, even referees, give us the under today. We'll go under 51, a Mac Daddy Stogie special for that one. Bengals and Browns under 51. And we have one more. Give us your tired, your poor, your weak, your huddled masses. The New York Jets are getting 10.5 points against Buffalo. Now, who in their right mind would take the Jets today? Sam Darnold back in the lineup. He's the 30th rated quarterback in Pro Football Focus. Josh Allen, number 6. The Jets are a train wreck, a disaster. 0-6 straight up, 0-6 against the spread. Who does that anymore? They're a dumpster fire, and it seems to get worse every single week. The point differential, 110 for this team in 6 games. Lined open with a 10.5 favorite. Everybody is united in their disgust for the Jets, and they've put the Bills all the way up to maybe 11 and 12 in some spots so far. This line might go even higher. Wait till game time if you're going to jump on this with us. Buffalo has value as a road team with a line move, but that's not going to matter. This is the Jets at home getting double-digit points. The Jets are awful, but we do have contrarian divisional underdogs with an inflated line giving double-digit points. And our trend, winless teams in week 3 through 8 since 2003, and they're not covering at a 20% clip. That's the Jets in a nutshell. Those teams cover 60.2% of the time. Anything double digits is too many points in this game. The Jets may not win, but they will keep this game close. I've tried to just like I used to tell my elementary school teachers when I was a kid, wherever there's trouble, I'll be there. And I'll be there when the Jets finally cover a spread. Take the Jets to cover. It's ugly. You're not proud of yourself for doing it, but the Jets will cover today. So those are your Mac Daddy Stogies. The Bengals and Browns to go under the total of 51, and the Jets getting double-digit dogs. Take those bad boys to the desert and smoke them. Coming up after the break, we'll wrap things up, get you ready for the Angelo Show right here on ESPN Radio 1300 and 92.5. But first, don't forget the real estate market in this economy right now. It's a good time to buy. Trey McCauley, bestlexingtonhomes.com. He is doing business right now, and he was telling me the other day that his business is going very well because this is the best time for buyers and sellers due to what's going on in the world around us. So look up my good friend Trey McCauley, bestlexingtonhomes.com, and don't miss out on a great time to invest in real estate. We'll wrap things up coming up here on ESPN Radio 1300 and 92.5. ESPN Radio 1300, 92.5. The bottom line with Brad Taylor. Chauncey, this was a strikeout. You can't. Dexy's Midnight Runners. Come on, man. What is this? The Simpsons from 1991? Come on, dude. We have to have a conference about this music after this. Hey, coming up after the show, it's Angelo Carriero. Don't forget to tune into his show. He will have all kinds. I've talked to him this morning. He's got baseball fever, just like the rest of us here at ESPN Radio. If you want to hear that baseball game tonight, tune into ESPN Radio. 7:30, Dodgers and Rays. Kershaw versus Glasnow. Will Kershaw continue to exercise his playoff demons? We don't think so. Hey, if you're kind of a gambler like we are, let's go Rays. Let's go under tonight in that game. Don't forget our sister station, 92.1 Classic Rock today. Bengals-Browns at 1 o'clock. Also, Chiefs and Broncos at 4 o'clock. Patrick Mahomes versus Drew Lock. That should be an easy matchup, right? And this afternoon, Titans and Steelers at 1 o'clock here on ESPN Radio with my man Mike Vrabel, the master of the 12 men on the field penalty, my kind of guy. So, yes, big day here on ESPN Radio. Make sure to tune in to the Angelo Show coming up next. Thanks for listening to The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor. We appreciate you listening as always. Make sure to follow us on Twitter @BottomLineLex. And until the next time, as always, may the winners be yours.